Now, the Western States Book Awards, they're part of an overall organization. Tell me a little bit about your group and how it came about.
Well, in 1974, a group of state arts agencies, their directors and chairs, came together and decided that there should be some things occurring in the West that could not happen on the basis of one state doing them. We've talked for years, of course, about the great geographic expanses of the West, and we have them. We have a lot of small towns and long stretches between water holes, as it were. The organization essentially was put together in 1974, and actually prior to that, that was the incorporation date, primarily to move performing arts touring programs around the West. We have very few resident companies in the West, and very few nationally known companies, at least at that time, in the West. So with the performing arts touring program impetus, this group of states banded together to just make touring programs happen.
Now, the funding was through the states themselves, is that
state
correct?
State arts agencies and the National Endowment for the Arts, too. We've had long and substantial help from the Arts Endowment. We can simply do it without them. One thing led to another. We got very actively involved with visual arts exhibitions.
Well, let me backtrack just a second. Where were you when all of this was taking place?
Well, it's a little incestuous, but I'll tell you. At the time this organization was put together, I was the director of the Oregon State Arts Commission and one of the founding members of the Western States Arts Federation. And I was its first chairman. And about a year and a half later, I left that position and went to work for the National Endowment for the Arts as one of their regional representatives. In varying and sundry group of the Western states, the geography changed several times, but essentially I was always working in the West. And I did that for 10 years, working for the Arts Endowment. And then when the Western States job happened to come open again, and I knew it was time for me to leave the Arts Endowment because I'd been there for quite some time, so I took over as executive director of the organization that I helped found.
Mm-hmm. And they're in Santa Fe?
In Santa Fe, yes.
Is that an unlikely place?
It is an unlikely place.
Not Seattle, it's big.
Well, the organization was originally in Denver, Colorado, which at that time was very central because there were just, I believe, 9 states at that particular time, 9 or 10. They're most of the Rocky Mountain states plus Oregon and Washington. And then as the organization expanded, we expanded to include California and Alaska and Hawaii. So geographically, the center of our region would be about Seattle by the time you take in Anchorage and Honolulu and then the southwest tier of states. We happen to be in Santa Fe for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is Santa Fe is a good art town. It's a good art center. It's a center for tourism. It's very strong in the visual arts. So they say, whoever they are, that make these particular pronouncements, Santa Fe is reputed to be the third largest art market in the United States. Additionally, there is a world-class opera there, the Santa Fe Opera, and the Santa Fe Chamber Music Festival, both in summer season. So there are a lot of activities that make it an art center.
Yeah, it really doesn't matter where you are.
It doesn't.
In fact, it's probably preferable because if you were in Los Angeles, I would have a feeling that the organization would tend to be identified with Los Angeles.
We find some great advantages in being in Santa Fe, and for that reason, first of all, we're not swallowed up there. Secondly, as you mentioned, we can do business anywhere because we don't do much of anything locally, no matter where we are. And thirdly, I think we get a lot of mileage out of a lot of lovely people that we work with, Alice B. Atchison included, who has given us such great assistance on these book awards. A lot of people like to come to Santa Fe. They work
with us. So, to go back a little, now to go back, you were telling me that essentially the organization was formed to send touring groups out. Is mm-hmm. that correct? Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, the performing arts touring continued to grow. This was a whole range of performing arts activities in music, theater, and dance. In dance, everything from classical ballet through modern, through some things that I don't really quite know what they are. I didn't know then, and I still don't know now, but we tour them. And the same thing occurs in music, from symphonic music through jazz, through folk, ethnic, and the same thing occurs in theater. So we pushed and expanded some ideas. My board of trustees is a rather unusual critter. We happen to like artists, and we happen to believe in people that make art. We also deal with people that make art happen. So we deal with presenters, but we also deal with artists. So when we began to expand some of these programs, particularly into visual arts and literature, we were always concerned about what can we do that is good for artists. And good for artists, we have a very parochial view of who artists are because they're artists from the West in our 13 Western states. So we took some of those concepts, ideas, and questions, because we do talk to artists, and we ask them, what do you need? What would be good for you? And quite often after we discussed fellowships, which everybody says, well, gee, I'd like to have some money. And fellowships are a wonderful idea, particularly if you get one. If you don't get one, they're still a good idea in concept, but in practice it perhaps goes a little begging. So when we talk to visual artists, and then shortly after that, and when I say talk to visual artists, we actually did some pretty hard rock research, personal interviews, one-on-one interviews, and then we did the same thing with writers. And artist, after we had the discussion about fellowships, simply said, I need a forum. I need the opportunity to compete. And the same things that held true, those things that held true with the performing arts arena did not necessarily hold true with visual arts and writers. And I say that only because I mentioned earlier the West at that time, and still to a degree does not have a lot of resident performing arts companies, but we do have writers and we do have painters and we do have sculptors. They can just about live anywhere so long as they have a certain reasonable access to markets.
Well, what happens? Does a writer contact you and say, hey, I'd like to have a fellowship to sustain myself while I work on this project?
We have not gotten into the fellowships for writers yet. It may come in place of fellowships, or instead of fellowships, I should say. Back in 1982, we started putting this research project together, which ultimately led to the Western States Book Awards, which essentially was based on the opportunity for recognition for writers. We have another concern, independent publishing. Usually we call them small presses, but sometimes they're not so small. They're usually labors of love, as you well know. And except for perhaps some larger university presses, many of them exist in garages and back shops and adjacent buildings and so forth. And they're genuinely a labor of love.
Yeah, Black Sparrow has an international reputation. It's probably the best known of the presses in the current world.
I agree. And sometimes even a small press can have a national or international reputation in terms of the quality of the work. We weren't concerned about the quality of the work because we knew the quality was good. How do you get the word out? How do you get the books out? And it comes down to an adventure, if you will, in distribution and selling. One can write a lovely book, perhaps, and many of them are written any parts of the country. But if you can't find the book, first of all, if you can't get a review and if you don't know it's there, and that's a difficulty, then if you do get a review and press and know it's there, then you have to find where the there is. And if the distribution system is such that you cannot walk into a bookstore and find the book, then a lot of work has gone for naught. So what we hope to do with these Western States Book Awards was not only to give credence, if you will, and a stamp of approval, if you will, to what we presume to be terrific writing that occurs in the West, but also a national scope of distribution and review and presentation that would allow for more books to be printed, subsequently more books to be in stores, and subsequently more books to be sold. We don't believe that the program is aimed at making a small press into a large press, just simply a better press. And it many times is the difference between selling 500 or 1,000 copies of a book and perhaps 5,000 or 10,000 copies of a book. And that's what we, in part, have been able to do through these Western States Book Awards.
But you wouldn't offer an award to a rich, established writer like Tony Hillerman or Louis L'Amour, would you?
Sure.
You mean if Tony Hillerman were to come knocking at your door? He lives in Albuquerque,
well,
not too far away.
Tony Hillerman doesn't exactly do the knocking, and I'll explain a little bit. The awards aren't all that convoluted or restrictive, but let me explain a little bit about how they work. First of all, a writer does not submit to us. we require that in the awards process, in the awards competition, that the writer is to join up, if you will, with a press, whether it be a small press or a university press or a large press or a whatever press. The writer has to be among or living in our somewhere in our 13 Western states, and they have to come in with a press in our 13 Western states that's willing to publish a work if, in fact, an award is given. So the press submits the book, if you will.
So Tony Hillerman wouldn't qualify with Harper & Row based here in New York. That would not be a
Western
press.
If Harper & Row came to us, no. No. But if Tony was publishing somewhere else in the West, yeah, the answer would be yes.
Mm-hmm. Like the Presidio Press, I believe that's in, I'm not sure where it is. I think it's Los Angeles, San Francisco. This would qualify.
Sure.
It's a very small press.
Yes. Well, like I say, it isn't really geared to, we just use the word small as kind of a generic stuffer, I guess, if you will. We've all come, those of us that still believe in some opportunities for what we call serious literature here in the United States, on many occasions, that stuff called serious literature happens to be lodged within the confines of what we call small presses, but the size is not an imperative. Anyway, when the publisher of the press submits the work of a Western writer, they come in manuscript form. Interestingly enough, our awards, at least to the best of our knowledge, are the only awards that take place in manuscript form. Most of the awards are usually after the fact considerations.
Gee, you haven't even seen the finished book at the time?
That's correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this awards panel, which I'll speak to in just a moment, reads these manuscripts. Passionately, I might add. They read quite a number of them. And as they review these manuscripts, they say, gee, this is a pretty terrific book, pretty terrific idea. There may still be some editing to do, obviously. And if chosen, as I say, we strike a contract with the press. And if they're chosen, then they must be ready, willing, and able to publish the book in hardcover. And that allows for it's a two-pronged situation that we think has worked very handsomely. First of all, backing up to the choices of the manuscripts, we put together a group that we believe to be some rather remarkable people way back when in the first awards in 1984. We thought we'd ask Robert Penwarren to chair the jury panel, and he said yes. And that was quite wonderful for us, and subsequently we've had some pretty remarkable book people, writers, editors, participating on the selection panel.
Do you have separate panels for each category?
No, it's fiction, creative, nonfiction, and poetry, and our panel is usually big enough to handle it all. Jonathan Galassi was our second chair.
How large is the panel?
It's five, I think.
And they cast votes like other judges?
Well, it isn't really like other judges in casting votes, per se. It works more like a panel. I prefer to refer to them as panels. They function so similarly to all the discipline panels at the National Endowment for the Arts, of which I was a part of for many, many years. It rarely gets down to voting, per se. I suppose we use some numerical system from time to time to help ease out the bumps and the valleys, but they really work as a panel. They all read a certain number of the manuscripts, and then they all come together and discuss those ones that have clearly risen to the top in their estimation. I might add that Elizabeth Hardwick is going to be our panel chair on this next round. And we're pleased about that. Elizabeth was on the panel this last year, and now she's going to chair it this next time. So those decisions just come about. They're certainly not happenstance. These are people that passionately love and understand literature, great minds in the rooms, and they come to grips with, gee, this is a pretty terrific book, and how terrific do you think it is, and do you, and they just come to that decision.
Well, there's more than just the prestige of winning the award. There's actually money involved, too, as well as a finished book.
Well, that's true. I would say the cash awards are modest. Nonetheless, we have to raise all that money, which I might add, it's important for everyone to know the kind of financing and funding and support that we get, particularly the Xerox Foundation and Walden Books, our financial partners this year, and Crane Duplicating Service and Lang Communications out of Bellevue, Washington, and certainly the National Endowment for the Arts and Literature Program. All of those entities, plus our services and money combined to bring a cash award to the writer and to the press. Currently, it's $2,500 to each writer and $5,000 to each press. And the press proviso has to do with, although we don't totally restrict it, but we tell these people that this money plus our advisory committee, which I'll speak to in just a moment, these people are going to come together and work with you on marketing and distribution. And what we're going to attempt to do is put you, your press, into a position of, instead of publishing 1,000 or 1,500 books and not knowing where or how, perhaps, in some instances, to effectively market the works, this advisory committee is going to work with you on national marketing and distribution. And then, of course, we're not so narcissistic, even though it's entirely possible to be that way in Santa Fe, New Mexico, but we're not so much that dying of narcissism to think that we can do everything in the world that needs to be done out of Santa Fe, New Mexico. To wit, we have worked with and have hired and had a lovely relationship with Alice Atchison here in New York City, and she functions as our publicist in behalf of the awards, working with the authors and the presses.
Have you seen some of these books take off after winning the awards?
Well, there have been some wonderful stories. I've got a couple of notes written down here, which I'll refer to, but one, while I'm fumbling for a note here, that strikes me right off the bat was one of the first award winners was a gentleman by the name of Clyde Rice. He was an octogenarian from Portland, Oregon. He wrote a book called A Heaven in the Eye, and it was rather a lovely experience. Clyde was, as I said, in his 80s. It was his first book that he had written, and it was an award winner, and it was chosen by Brodart as its monthly McNaughton selection, and had purchase of paperback rights by Avon Books. And most recently we've talked to Clyde, and you know, Clyde is in his 80s. I don't know how old his wife is, but his wife has been employed, and Clyde's making enough money now that his wife is does not have to work, and Clyde is staying at home. He's writing his third book now. Those are rather wonderful kinds of vignettes. Tito Rios from Chandler, Arizona, and his press, Blue Moon Press, then of Tucson, now in Lewiston, Idaho. Tito was named one of the 100 Young People Changing America. And I don't know how much of this that we can ascribe to our book awards, but certainly it's a part of any kind of prestigious activity that occurs in behalf of a writer. He did recently, just this year, receive a Guggenheim Fellowship and receive the Pushcart Prize for Poetry. And we like those sorts of things.
Oh, sure. Do you have a big banquet where you pass out the awards?
We do. It isn't exactly a banquet, but we have made our awards announcements always dovetailing into the activities of the American Booksellers Association. And this year we were in Anaheim when
that was convenient.
ABA was there. Well, it's a nice dovetail. So we had an event at a private home in Newport Beach, and Alice Atchison and all the jurors were there. And we had a very nice presentation award ceremony, if you will. It wasn't terribly long or belabored, and it wasn't black tie, and it wasn't a banquet. But we find that ABA is interested in us. We are not publishers, we the Federation, but ABA is interested in us, and we are able to have a booth section at ABA. In the last instance, it was with Campman and Company that contributed some space to us. And the people on our advisory committee, which, as I mentioned, Campman and also Baker and Taylor and Ingram Book Company and so forth, all these people give us lovely little perks because they're very interested in what we do. And what we do, we think, is a very important little piece of the wave of the flag for those that still believe in serious literature.
Amen. It's a shame, however, that proportionately books seem to be so unimportant in the United States. In England, for example, when they hand out the Booker Prizes every year, they're on live television, just like the Oscars and the Emmys. And we don't do that here. And I think that that shows that we don't really have a major reading public. I mean, there is a large reading public simply because of the immense size of the United States. But I read somewhere, I think Publishers Weekly said something to the effect that only 1% of the adult population buys one hardcover book a year. And many of them probably buy automobile fix-it books and things like that. But that's not very encouraging, is it?
Well, it isn't, I guess. And so we're taking the opportunity again, I guess, to either raise a flag or a spear in behalf of some of this material that that we deeply believe in. I had a very interesting conversation with a corporation about their possible participation in these literature awards, and this person told me, said, "Well, we're currently the things that we're doing in literature have to do with literacy programs, and of course we all believe in that. Who would be anti-literacy, for heaven's sakes? And it is a concern nationally, if not internationally, about all the people that do not read, or cannot read, or both, and." At the same time, what our program is pushing toward is our organization is too small, I guess, to take on the enormous condition of literacy needs across the United States and elsewhere. But we are deeply concerned about, well, if someone can read, then what are they reading? And I guess it's just striking another blow in behalf of some awfully good poems from time to time and a series of short stories that sort of make the hair on the back of your neck stand up and some very lovely things in creative nonfiction, much the like of the work of Stanley Crawford, who was one of the winners this year, about an irrigation ditch in northern New Mexico. I'm about halfway through the book. I'm reading it all, but while it's a localized story, it's an international story. Those things that speak to all of us beyond geography. So we're still
there. It's a wonderful thing you're doing. And there's a contradiction. While there are complaints that not enough Americans read, I read a Newsweek article some time ago and said America is in a wash with books. That more books are being published than ever before. There are more bookstores than ever before. So. It's just a massive contradiction. You don't know exactly where we're going. I guess we have more choices. We have more bookstores, more books, more videos, more movies, more everything.
Well, I think so, but I think you put your finger on it just earlier when you mentioned sort of the how-to books. I mean, it's entirely possible that I could go downstairs, go across the street to a bookstore and find a book that would tell me how to go downstairs and walk across the street and find a bookstore. I mean, the how-to books are just extraordinary. In their magnitude, not extraordinary perhaps in their depth. And sure, there are more books and there are more book outlets and you see more, I fly a lot in our business. We've got 13 Western states plus trips to New York and Washington and so forth in behalf of our corporation sponsors and our funding. And so all you have to do is just stop by an airport bookstore and see what's on the shelf. And I tend to shudder a bit.
Yeah, I was going to say that's not really representative. That's the stuff that moves fast.
Exactly. Yeah. But then you go into many of the retail bookstores and you find similar kinds of things. I'm not saying that there is not room for these sorts of things. But I got very deeply involved. I'm a writer, by the way, a closet poet. And I've published just a few things, and I don't know. It's a too terrifying experience, I guess.
Know. You might win one of your own awards one of these days.
No, we don't allow that. But just as a vignette, I have a great respect and admiration for the poet writer Richard Hugo, who died just a few years ago. And Richard Hugo from Missoula, Montana, spawned an entire. Almost a generation of serious poets and short story writers and novelists with that Missoula to Seattle connection. And I was in Missoula one day, and I went to the university bookstore. I was also looking for a book. My friend James Welch, the Blackfeet writer, both poet and novelist, I went to the university bookstore, and I wanted to get a particular book of Hugo's and a particular book of James Welch, both of these local boys teaching at the University of Montana, Missoula, Montana, and they didn't have either one of them. And I went downtown to two local bookstores, and Missoula is a good reading town, and they didn't have them. And then I went to the Little Professor bookstore downtown Missoula, which I believe is at least a regional chain, if not a national chain, and a pretty comprehensive selection of books and a big section of poetry, and they didn't have them. And I'm flummoxed, if you will, which is, I guess, one of the reasons for the presumed, if not real, success of this program. I am flummoxed when you can go into a bookstore and cannot find the books you know about by the people that you know about, by the people that you want to read.
And these were these were local authors.
Local, yes, yeah, of course, but national in scope.
Yeah,
national publishers in New York City.
I used to be on the National Alumni Board of my alma mater, Ohio University in Athens, and they had a Little Professor bookshop across the street from the campus, and they have a window display of local authors, the people who teach there, and are people who had taught, like Herbert Gold and a whole bunch of different people, and they'll have a nice display of their books. Maybe not all their current books, you can't always get some of their previous books, some of them are not in print, but that was very nice. It was charming to see, in effect, local authors, almost all affiliated with the university at one time or currently. Mm-hmm. That was nice. So I'm surprised a Little Professor in Missoula didn't do that. But they're a franchise, so
they
depend on the individuals who run it.
Well, I became... I wasn't furious, I guess. I just became so very disappointed over not being able to find the books of these, nationally known writers with national publishers, that I wrote up a proposal some years ago and wound up putting the proposal into the Yellowstone Art Center in Billings, Montana, which is a regional art center. There is simply nothing for about 600 miles in every direction of Billings in terms of arts and cultural affairs. And the Yellowstone Art Center is a very vigorous, small, wonderful visual arts center. And they also, thanks to my good friend Donna Forbes, have a serious bent toward regional writing. And this proposal that I wrote up, they did an extrapolation on, and they now have this regional writers program. I just suggested, well, why couldn't, if we can't find the books at the university bookstore or the local bookstore, why can't the Art Center become a regional bookseller in behalf of regional literature? So they did this, and they have a very wonderful project called the Regional Writers Project. It's very descriptive. And you can go to the Yellowstone Art Center in person, or you can do a mail order business with the Yellowstone Art Center. And every state that touches Montana, plus a couple that don't, they essentially handle worse. They handle our books, by the way, the Western States Book Award winners, but essentially Oregon, Washington, Idaho, Colorado, Wyoming, Montana, and the Dakotas. And the important contemporary works that are coming off the press, no matter how small the press, no matter what the distribution factors are, you can go to the Yellowstone Art Center, and that is now a book purveyor, if you will, of serious literature in that Intermountain West area, and I love that kind of an idea.
Well, Terry Milton, you're doing a great service for the literate population, and it's a wonderful thing you're doing. And if there's any comfort, however, here in New York, you can go to a bookstore and never see a section of regional writers or New York City writers. You'll never see it. I don't know. Maybe there's too many writers in New York, but you'll never see it.
Could be.
Yeah. Any rate, it's a wonderful thing you're doing, and congratulations. And it was nice being able to talk to you after, I guess, I saw you last 2 years ago. So it's nice to renew our conversation. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Don.